59 degrees outside. And looking out the window to the world, it's rather blue and sort of sunny still. I still think we should abandon these silly time changes. They're a remnant of our past. I'm with the... I guess there's, what, one or two states that... Arizona and a couple of other states, I think, don't abide by these silly time changes. That's probably one thing they've got right. Anyway, stay tuned. The local news will be coming up momentarily.
Welcome to the local news for Monday, March 10th. I'm Carrie Reynolds reporting for KMUD. In today's news, a 6.9 earthquake 50 miles west of Eureka rocks the earth from San Francisco to southern Oregon. Local residents urge naval specialists to stop the permitting of U.S. Navy training exercises off the north coast. And rural residents throughout Humboldt object to plans for cuts in the Humboldt County budget. All that and more coming right up. Sunday night, the earth trembled for about 40 seconds, starting around 10:18 p.m., surprising folks from as far south as San Francisco and as far north as southern Oregon. The earthquake's epicenter was 50 miles west of Eureka and about 4 miles beneath the Pacific seabed. According to the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department, there have been no reports of injuries or major damage due to the earthquake. Nevertheless, geologist Jay Patton says it was a great reminder that we live in an earthquake-prone area. Patton is the director of a nonprofit called Cascadia Geosciences. According to Patton, we experienced a strike-slip earthquake with one slight foreshadowing tremor and several aftershocks. He also said that a strike-slip earthquake can promote a subsequent subduction zone earthquake. Here's my conversation with Jay Patton.
I am Jason Patton. People know me as Jay Patton. And I am one of the directors of the Cascadia Geosciences, a nonprofit in Northern California.
Okay, Jay, thank you so much for providing information today and talking with us. What can you tell us about this earthquake we experienced last night?
Well, we're really lucky because this was a really strong earthquake, a magnitude 6.9. But luckily for us, it was far enough offshore that it probably didn't do too much damage, although I've heard some reports of landsliding in the bluffs between Redway and Garberville, and I've seen some photos of people's broken windows online. But it's really great for us because it reminds us that we live in earthquake country and we can expect more earthquakes like this in the future and possibly much larger earthquakes in the future.
Were there aftershocks in this earthquake?
Yes, there were aftershocks. There were about 20 aftershocks larger than the magnitude 2.5, and there was actually a foreshock about a half hour to an hour and a half, didn't check the time, before the main shock. So spectacular evidence of the linkages between the different faults in the Gorda Plate. And that's where this earthquake occurred, was in the Gorda Plate, which is one of our three main tectonic plates in this region that all meet at the Mendocino Triple Junction. We have the Pacific Plate, which is sliding side by side in a strike-slip fashion with the North America plate along the San Andreas Fault, and that fault rips through Shelter Cove, and then the Gorda plate is subducting beneath the North America plate to form the Cascadia subduction zone, and that's the fault zone that we expect to have a much larger earthquake in the next 50 to 100 years or so.
The earthquake that happened yesterday, what is it called, and explain that?
Oh, the earthquake that happened yesterday was a strike slip fault that occurred in the Gorda plate. And a strike slip fault is when two plates or two parts of the crust are moving side by side each other when you're looking down at the crust from outer space.
This earthquake occurred in the ocean. Was there any danger of it causing a tsunami?
It is highly unlikely that a strike-slip earthquake would generate a tsunami, although it is possible, especially if the crust has topography that would displace the ocean water, or if the earthquake were to trigger a submarine landslide. And tsunamis from submarine landslides tend to have larger run-ups, tsunami run-ups, although those tsunami run-ups are localized.
With this earthquake occurring, does it increase the possibility of more earthquakes to follow?
Well, looking at some work that Chris Rollins and Ross Stein from the USGS worked on a few years ago, they looked at a number of similar earthquakes in the Gorda Plate from the last 30 years or so, 40 years, back to 1980. And they found that an earthquake like this can promote a subduction zone earthquake in a very small part of the subduction zone, whereas the rest of the subduction zone that a subduction zone earthquake is inhibited or is less likely to occur. So it's a toss in the air whether or not this will possibly trigger a subduction zone earthquake. But they did find that it is possible that this type of an earthquake might trigger other earthquakes that are similar to it, either in the Gorda Plate or along the Mendocino Fault, which is the third main fault system in our region, where the Gorda Plate slides to the east relative to the Pacific Plate.
Could you explain again what a subduction zone earthquake is?
Yes, a subduction zone earthquake is when there is one tectonic plate. In this case, the Gorda Plate, an oceanic plate, is thrusting underneath a continental plate, in this case, the North America Plate. And the subducting Gorda Plate is going down all the time, and it gets stuck on the North America Plate. And the North America Plate bends and gets all stressed out. And as soon as the stress on the fault is larger then the strength of the fault, the subduction zone earthquake will occur.
Finally, is there any website that you recommend people watch that are interested in following the aftermath of this earthquake?
Well, there are two websites. One website is earthquakes.usgs.gov, and you can go there and click on the map and see all the earthquakes that are happening. And you can even sign up for email alerts, so you get an email every time that there is an earthquake greater than a certain magnitude. And I've been posting material about this earthquake and background about our regional plate tectonics at earthj.com.
There were two landslides reported yesterday, although it's not entirely clear whether they were related to the earthquake, to recent rainfall, or to a combination of the two. Matt Harvey, Public Information Officer with California Highway Patrol's Arcata office, gives details on CHP's response to the earthquake and the landslides.
Could you please tell us of any reports of landslides or other damages today?
Yeah, absolutely. So just after the earthquake occurred, we did have several CHP units out checking local roadways, as well as Caltrans maintenance crews were out as well. We didn't receive any reports of any damaged roadways as a result of the earthquake. The units that we had out there on the roadways did not find any damage that they could attribute to the earthquake specifically. We did have two separate landslides, one in Humboldt County, which was on Redwood Drive at Evergreen Road. And Redwood Drive connects Redway and Garberville. There was one landslide there that was blocking the roadway. We had units and county roads come out and clean that up. And then up in Del Norte County, I believe there was a landslide on 199. And again, with both those, especially with, you know, with the rainfall we've had recently, I believe that probably both those landslides would be more attributed to the rainfall and the water that was absorbed into those hillsides rather than the earthquakes.
Anything else you want to tell listeners with these landslides occurring? Any words of caution for driving on the road?
You know, motorists, if you're going to be heading out, going anywhere in Humboldt County or in California for that matter, you can always go to quickmaps.com, which is Caltrans' website. They keep that updated as to any road closures or, you know, any lane closures in the area, and so you can get good information from there. You can also go on the chp.ca.gov website. We have our public dispatch log there that motorists can check out to see any current incidents that might be blocking any roadways. And, you know, we always encourage people that, you know, to definitely utilize the 911 system if there's an immediate emergency. But if there's anything less than an emergency that needs to be dealt with right away, we encourage people to call the local public dispatch number. If it's in county, they can call the CHP's public dispatch number, which is 268-2000. And then if they're in within city limits, they'll just have to look up the public phone number for the dispatch in that area.
Yesterday afternoon in northern Mendocino's Laytonville area, all travel was stopped for 4.5 hours on Branscombe Road near Cotto Drive, 2.5 miles west of downtown Laytonville, due to the discovery of what appeared to be one or two bombs. Lieutenant Greg Stefani with the Mendocino Sheriff's Office said they had no information on the incident as it was handled entirely by California Highway Patrol. CHP Officer Lazinski with the Garberville office provides a few details on what happened.
Officer Lazinski, could you please tell us what you know about the closure of Branscombe Road on this Sunday?
Sunday the 9th, Branscombe Road was closed from approximately 1:30 in the afternoon to 6 o'clock in the evening in the area of Cotto for a reported bomb in the area on the roadway.
What authorities were sent to the scene?
CHP officers and sergeant were sent to the scene along with the Mendocino County Sheriff's Department, and also Laytonville Fire responded.
Was traffic stopped in both directions?
Correct.
Was there anything found?
They located a small device, unknown at this time what it was. The Humboldt County Bomb Task Force responded to the scene and detonated the device, no incident.
Was it a large detonation?
Not sure.
Any other details you can provide or tell me how to get in touch with the Humboldt County Bomb Task Force?
I do not have that information. That is all the details I have right now.
KMUD hopes to bring you more details on that incident in the future. U.S. Navy specialists were in Eureka and Fort Bragg last week to answer questions and hear comments on controversial coastal training exercises. Tomorrow's news program will include a report on the Fort Bragg hearing from David Gurney. Now we will hear more about the Eureka hearing from Daniel Mintz.
The U.S. Navy is seeking renewal of its permits to conduct sonar and munitions training off the Pacific Northwest coast, and scores of Humboldt County residents have spoken out against it. Navy specialists were at Eureka's Red Lion Inn Hotel last Thursday for an open house and to field public comment on renewal of permits that lapse in 2015. Training exercises with active and passive sonar and explosives are proposed to be continued, with Humboldt County being the southern fringe of a project area that stretches through to the Washington coast and to southeast Alaska. During a public comment session, members of an audience of about 100 residents passionately criticized the Navy's activities, describing them as unnecessary and ecologically harmful. But in a presentation, Navy Program Manager John Mosher said the impacts of the training program are controlled and limited.
In the draft EIS, the Navy's proposed activities were determined to have the potential for significant impacts on marine mammals, marine birds, fish, and sea turtles. Though individual animals in these resource groups may be adversely affected, the overall fitness of species populations is not expected to decrease, and critical habitat areas are not expected to be adversely impacted. For marine mammals, birds, and sea turtles, it is significant to note that no mortalities are predicted due to the use of sonar or explosives, and no mortalities are being requested for permanent because of sonar or explosive training and testing. Marine mammal effects could include behavioral response or injury, though the analysis indicates that the vast majority of these effects would be limited to non-injury causing behavioral responses.
Navy Commander Matthew Hahn linked the training to preservation of national security. He said there are over 300, quote, extremely quiet modern diesel submarines being operated by over 40 nations. Stealth submarines, torpedoes, and underwater mines are a, quote, true threat to the U.S., making training essential, he added. That message didn't wash with the audience. Mark Nipper said he was once a crew member on a nuclear submarine, and the experience has shaped his views on what the Navy's doing.
We do not need to live in fear of other nations' submarines at this time in our lives. The Earth is in jeopardy, and without dolphins and whales, the rest of us are going to die. We need every entity that exists on the planet that was put here by some entity more knowledgeable and greater than the rest of us to still continue to exist. We are decimating the planet at amazing rates, and we're losing hundreds of species on a daily basis. We cannot afford to lose sentient beings such as dolphins and whales because the boys want to play with their toys. And that's, I know that's all it is.
Amber Shelton of the Environmental Protection Information Center called for an extension of a 60-day comment period and said the Navy's activities will, quote, result in significant harm to countless marine mammals, including species that are listed under the Endangered Species Act. She added that the Navy's impact analysis is, quote, incomplete and in violation of several environmental laws. Former Arcata Councilmember David Meserve was the first of several speakers who said the Navy could use simulation technology, and Petrolia resident Ellen Taylor described the training as a, quote, strengthening of this whole system of dominating the planet militarily. Michael Evanson of the Matol Salmon Group responded to the predicted lack of mortalities.
Now, in talking with some of the people out there, it was clear that, yes, there will be some animals harmed. The study showed that none will be killed. Let's look at this city of Eureka here. There's 30,000 people. But, you know, during the daytime, it's a city of 60,000, because a lot of us who don't live in Eureka are here. Now, Eureka is economically depressed, but it is not acceptable to harm 30 or 50 or 60 people, not kill them, who are in Eureka while some kind of training is going on, and consider that, well, the population isn't impacted, just some individuals are impacted. That's wrong logic. And the whole logic of your process is wrong.
One woman wore a bloody ear dolphin headpiece and said, quote, stop dumping poison and intense sonar in the oceans. These things are damaging to the organs, brains, and ears of our people. Technical difficulties with the audio system provided an ironic compliment to the comments on sonar impacts. As feedback repeatedly squealed, members of the audience held their ears and quipped about the plight of sonar-harassed dolphins. The final environmental impact statement for the Navy training is expected to be released this summer, with an approval decision due this fall. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
And in rescue news, rescue teams from Mendocino to Humboldt to Del Norte counties have responded to three separate kayaking incidents over the past 4 days. A group of friends enjoyed the day Friday floating down the Mattol River until around 7:30 p.m. as the group neared their takeout point in Honeydew. Some of them saw that one member of their party was missing from his sit-on-top kayak. They contacted Honeydew volunteer firefighter Ian Sigmund, who immediately called 911 and resumed the job of incident commander. Luckily, volunteers from the Honeydew Fire Department were able to locate the missing kayaker, who at the time of the rescue had been clinging to a river rock for over 2 hours. They retrieved him from the river and transported him 1,000 feet up to the road, where a ground ambulance treated him for possible hypothermia and transported him to the Triple Junction High School, where he was then flown by CalStar helicopter to a hospital. Sigmund says about 13 volunteers worked around 3 hours to help that kayaker. Then on Saturday morning, just before 10 a.m., Southern Humboldt Rescue Team responded to a water rescue near Confusion Hill. The rescue team assisted a 25-year-old kayaker near Standish Hickey, close to the confluence of Bridge Creek and the South Fork of the Eel River. The Central Valley resident's kayak had capsized, and he was able to pull himself onto the bank opposite Highway 101. Unfortunately, his gear and boat landed on the highway side of the river. He was able to flag down a motorist who called 911. Rescuers were able to throw him a personal flotation device with a rope and pulled him safely to the opposite bank, where he received medical assistance. Finally, today, starting at 6 a.m., the Coast Guard and the Del Norte County Search and Rescue Team resumed their search from Sunday night for a missing kayaker in the upper South Fork Smith River. According to the Del Norte Triplicate, on Sunday, a kayaker was startled to see his friend's kayak floating down the river with no occupant, and he stopped at a residence in Big Flat to contact authorities. The Del Norte County Sheriff's Office reported to KIEM News Channel 3 that a body was found this afternoon submerged in the Smith River. It is believed to be the kayaker who went missing this Sunday. And Humboldt County plans to cut spending this coming fiscal year. Last Thursday night, Humboldt County supervisors, along with the county administrative officer, held a public hearing on budget planning at 5 separate locations. KMUD's Eric Black reports on rural residents who say the county is neglecting outlying areas.
Good news arrived when the county closed the books on its 2012-2013 fiscal year, a higher-than-expected ending balance in the county's general fund. But then this winter came some bad news.
Property taxes are now expected to increase less than we had previously forecast.
At last week's budget meeting, the county's top executive, CAO Philip Smith Haynes, said a low inflation rate will limit next year's property tax rate. Property taxes are the prime source of revenue for the county's general fund. An 11% drop in average Humboldt County home prices in December will further erode that tax revenue base. Here's more bad news.
And the state retirement system, CalPERS, has made three big decisions that help out their bottom line, but increase our local costs much more rapidly.
Pension costs are expected to increase $650,000 during the 2014-2015 fiscal year beginning July 1st. That cost will have tripled over the past decade.
There are a host of factors that contributed to this. Benefit changes, retirees living longer, the economic crash, changes in wages, and so forth.
Bottom line, if spending continues unfettered next fiscal year, the county will use almost all of its remaining savings to pay its expenses.
However, we calculate that if we cut about $2 million out of our deficit for next year, we can achieve balance in the long run.
Haynes said this is not a crisis. The county isn't contemplating layoffs or other drastic measures. But supervisors do need to trim the county's waistline. Various speakers cautioned against doing that in the outlying areas.
We're having burglaries and thefts. There's fires being started. There's people living where they shouldn't be. There's trespassing. There's littering.
Garberville Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Cinnamon Paula said she receives daily complaints from Southern Humboldt business owners.
All I can tell them to do is call the sheriff, call the sheriff, call the sheriff. A lot of them have started doing that, and yet the sheriff is unable to respond because we don't have enough coverage down here.
I know that's an issue that we've heard for several years at these community meetings and something that the sheriff is very aware of.
But the county CAO stopped short of promising change.
As I mentioned in my presentation, we're trying really hard this year to maintain services. We're really not looking at any sort of enhanced services, but we want to do as little harm as possible to law enforcement services.
Southern Humboldt resident Dottie Russell noted that Health and Human Services consumes about half of the county's budget, but provides most of its services in Eureka.
If we're going to be addressing that this is one county and we're 60 miles or more away, then we need to make sure that the resources that are available in Eureka are also available in Southern Humboldt.
I know that's an issue that Health and Human Services is addressing right now. They're doing a revision to their space planning and talking about doing more dispersed services into communities.
It's important to note that supervisors have little control over the social services budget because about 96% of Health and Human Services funding comes from outside the general fund.
Thank you for those comments. And next we will go to Arcata, and I believe there are some folks standing by.
As the meeting dragged on, people commented from sites in Scotia, Miranda, Arcata, and Eureka. Each county supervisor attended the meeting in his own district. Access Humboldt streamed the event on the web and broadcast it on TV. Participants at each site were able to watch and listen to live comments from every other site.
Hello, welcome to Hoopa. We have a couple of questions here. The first one is from...
When the scene shifted to Hoopa, Kristan Korns returned to a familiar theme.
A lot of people in the Willow Creek area are very concerned about a large increase in crime in the past couple of years, and they're noticing that their public safety seems to be being cut back in the area at a time when they actually need more coverage.
Haynes acknowledged a reduced sheriff's presence in eastern Humboldt County, but couldn't promise a restoration of service. He did say the county could make up part of its $2 million shortfall by following Eureka and Arcata's lead and creating a sales tax.
If the county sales tax rate were the same as those two cities, we would generate about $1 million additionally each year.
Voters would have to pass such a tax. Also, county staff will report to the board in the near future on the possibility of an excessive electricity users tax based on Arcata's model. Tomorrow, meaning Tuesday, supervisors will likely approve strategic changes that will guide county decision-making this year. On June 3rd, staff will present a proposed budget to the Board of Supervisors. The public will be able to comment on that proposal at two public hearings later that month. Eric Black, KMUD News.
And turning now to crime news. Friday morning, a deceased body was found in the small town of Lolita, south of Eureka, along the side of Singley Hill Road. The body has been identified as 44-year-old Wesley Wright of Eureka. According to KIEM-TV, Wright is the man accused of stabbing his own dog with a knife back in December. He was supposed to appear in court Friday afternoon, the same day he was found dead. Anyone with information for the sheriff's office regarding this case or related criminal activity is encouraged to call the sheriff's office at 707-445-7251 or the sheriff's office crime tip line at 268-2539. And in Del Norte County, the body found last weekend on national forest land near Gasquet has been identified as 52-year-old Robert Essex. An autopsy indicates that Essex died of upper gastrointestinal bleeding, according to the Del Norte County Sheriff's Office. Essex's body was discovered on March 1st by hikers about a mile from where Craig's Creek meets the South Fork of Smith River. Essex's truck was discovered in a parking lot in Crescent City 2 days later. Sheriff Commander Bill Stephen told media that there is no obvious signs of foul play, but they are continuing to investigate that possibility. And that's all for the local news. Thank you for listening. And thank you to our contributing reporters, Daniel Mintz, Eric Blacks, and Thanks to Garth Epling for engineering. The KMUD local news is rebroadcast nightly on KYBU Radio in Covelo and again at 8 a.m. on KMUD Radio.